Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
All right, welcome. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this here show. And again, we will be keeping you updated as to our plans on when and where we will launch our one-man show. This will be a live show. It will be for your enjoyment there in, a live venue.
Like in a theater, like, are you planning on, I know it's not Carnegie Hall, but not the Kennedy, but a theater.
Well, yeah, but in a live venue, you know.
Like what? Like in a club or something?
It'll be in venues like that, club size and then bigger if we're lucky, you know.
And what do you mean by lucky? You mean it has to, in other words, it has to take off.
Well, sure, of course, you know. And what you have to do is produce a show that isn't just going to be good for the audience that knows you, for my audience. That's I'm grateful for the people that know me and for the people that would come out and watch us. But it has to be something that is going to attract people who say, oh, wow, you know, I saw this show that a friend of mine took me to, a guy named Phil Hendry, who I'd never heard of, and I went and saw it, and it was really good, and I really liked it, and they begin kind of the buzz that way.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
You don't know what I mean by that.
Well, what do you mean by create the buzz?
If someone comes to see the show who likes me, right?
Yeah. No, I know that part, but what about...
What do you mean when they bring someone that doesn't know you?
When you bring somebody to... Haven't you ever done that? Haven't you ever said, oh, you should come with me to go see this guy?
What?
Are you kidding me, Margaret? You're a theater... you've been writing about theater your whole life.
I'm just messing around. Go ahead.
You know, I've had enough of this messing around stuff.
Come on, man. What's your sense of humor? All we're doing, just pulling your leg, man.
Yeah, we're just funning with you.
God almighty. You're Mr. Joke until people start joking you.
All right. Okay, I'm sorry, but I mean, all night long people have been joking. So you know what I mean?
Of course I do. You're saying that people will come to see your show bringing along a friend. And if that friend likes it and they've never heard of you before, they'll say, oh, I saw a show, and they'll bring a friend, and they'll bring a friend. Well, forget it. It won't happen.
You don't think it'll happen?
I'm kidding. Yes, of course I do.
Will you knock it off?
All I'm just pulling your leg, and you can't take it.
Yes, I can take it. I'm supposed to be the guy that pulls legs around here. All right.
What about this gay thing?
Take it easy, bud. Don't start getting empowered because Margaret's putting one over on me, okay? This gay thing. I'm looking for the Stonewall article, and again, now I'm on the next day. This is June 30th, and guess what? I still don't see any reference to this Stonewall event on the front page of the New York Times, and I may have to just sort of... So I think what this is a very good education on the Times, and I'll tell you...
The New York Times.
No, the times that we were living in then. And I'll tell you something. I've often said, and I believe it's true, if you want to get into a time capsule and literally immerse yourself in what it must have been like to be, to live in those days, you know, get yourself like this New York Times CD-ROM or something similar that will immerse you in the period where all you have in front of you are the events of the day, and you'll begin to feel like a time traveler. And it's an amazing experience because suddenly you're seeing terms like, you know, Negro and homosexual, and you're seeing things that you would think would be on the front page of a newspaper, and they're not. They're buried 3, 4, 5 pages back because those things weren't important in those days. And again, here we are on the June 30th, and the headline in the New York Times is influence of Joint Chiefs is reported rising, and it has this picture, this ominous picture of all of these military guys, you know.
Well, this is, people were afraid of a military dictatorship, Phil. And you know that the book was called, 7 Days in May. Do you remember the book 7 Days in May?
Yeah, that was about the gay movement, right?
No, it wasn't.
But no, it wasn't about the gay movement. 7 Days in May, I do remember.
That was a book about a fictitious, but nonetheless feared... military coup in the United States.
I know. And it has a climactic scene, I know, in the film where, you know, two generals, and I forget who they are.
Well, one was played by Burt Lancaster, and the other was played by the other one. Who wasn't Burt Lancaster?
What do you mean, who wasn't Burt Lancaster?
You had Burt Lancaster, then who wasn't him?
I don't know. Humphrey Bogart?
He was dead by then. Who... Get Frank on the phone, would you, Robin?
Well, I gotta wait for Mr. Henry.
Get Frank on the phone.
Go ahead.
I'll ask Frank.
Fine. But anyway, yeah, that's an interesting headline there. Influence of Joint Chiefs reported on the rise. So I suppose that there was a fear in this country that there could be possibly, I don't know, a military dictatorship, although I don't think... Is this Frank Ray? Frank, how you doing?
I'm better than Custer, young man. How are you?
Great. Margaret's here.
Frank, I have a question, darling. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, honey.
Who was... You know Burt Lancaster?
Yeah, I never met her, no.
All right, but you know who I'm talking about.
Of course.
Who was the other actor that wasn't Burt Lancaster?
Kirk Douglas.
That's it, Kirk Douglas.
And wait, can I ask a question before we move on?
What?
I want to ask, Frank, can I ask you something?
Yeah, go ahead.
How do you guys got some kind of shorthand here?
Who?
You and Margaret.
I don't know what you mean.
He's talking about the fact, what I said to you, who was not Burt Lancaster, and you knew immediately it was Kirk Douglas, because you just know how I think, right?
Well, I know how you think, but I also know that there was Burt Lancaster, and when you said who was the other one, you naturally you were going to say Kirk Douglas, because there wasn't any other actor that would possibly fit that bill. In other words, there was Burt Lancaster, and then there was Kirk Douglas, and then a whole bunch of, you know, other guys. That's the best way I can put it.
So those two guys were the biggest, huh?
I would say that those two guys were the biggest, and then you had, if you're talking about the early 1960s, is that where we're going with all of this?
Well, that era, yes.
All right, well, if you say to me, in the early 1960s, when I started producing television, I did a little bit of film, of course there was John Wayne, but when Margaret said,
when I said who was the other one?
Right. When Margaret said who was the other one, I immediately knew that he was talking about the other one. You say Burt Lancaster, and then you say who's the other one, and there's only one name you can say, and that's Kirk Douglas, because there's no other one that there is.
What does that mean? I don't know what that means.
What it means is you're not going to say John Wayne. You're not going to say there's Burt Lancaster and then there's John Wayne, because she does not belong with her. You see? And
she doesn't belong with her.
What?
Nothing.
He's got the gender confusion. You know that.
I know that. I thought it was simply a husband and wife knowing how each other thinks.
Well, that may be the case, but when he said who... He said to me, didn't he just say, Frank, honey, there's Burt Lancaster and who? And I said, Kirk Douglas, because that's a logical place to go. If you say Burt Lancaster, you're not going to say John Wayne. There's not those two, they have nothing to do with each other. You know, John Wayne, if you see John Wayne in a movie, you probably think of her being in Westerns. If you see Burt Lancaster in a movie, you probably think of her being in, I don't know, maybe a detective slash... and you probably see her, you still see her, making out with Deborah Carr on a beach when she took him by the shoulders and threw him on the sand. It was, you know, an amazing scene. And so I think everyone remembers Burt Lancaster for that scene, and From Here to Hell and Gone, or whatever the hell the name. I don't remember that.
From Here to Eternity.
What was it called?
It was called From Here to Eternity.
Well, you know, I never did like that movie, because a very good friend of mine was cut out of a boat, and you remember her, the late George Reeves. And
oh, did you know George Reeves?
I did, and she was a hell of an actor, and I liked George in that film, and I said to her... And they cut a lot of her scene out in subsequent showings of the movie. And George, so every time you bring up From Here to Hell and Back or Go to Hell, I call the movie Go Straight to Hell, because it doesn't matter to me what it's called. And
So you don't like the film?
No, I think it's a great film. But when George was cut out, I felt bad for her, and I told her later, I said, you know, that was dirty pool, George, and she said, what do you mean? I said, well, and from go straight to the, go to hell, you know, take it and go to hell, and she knew. See, that's the other thing. When you're talking to people that you know, I'm talking to Margaret, or I would talk to George, and God bless her, she's been gone these many years.
Do you think George Reeves killed himself?
No, I don't think so. I don't think anybody that knew George would believe that she killed herself, no.
Because that was the whole thing.
Yeah, I know. And they did that lousy movie with that Ben Affleck. And let me tell you something. I knew George Reeves, and Ben Affleck was no George Reeves. And
you know, George Reeves was a guy who had that one marvelous part, Superman, and it didn't seem to make him happy, did it?
No, it made him happy. It didn't make her happy, but it made him happy.
Who are you talking about?
The wife that George was married to. I forget his name, but that's the one they thought killed him. See, and that's who I think killed him.
What's her name?
I forget what his name is. Who was the gal that George was married to, Margaret?
Oh, I don't know, but they floated the rumor that somehow she had something to do with him getting killed, didn't they?
Yeah, there was some rumor about there was a bongo party going on when George got home that night, and they were playing bongos and sipping Cokes. And it was one of these wild bongo parties they used to have in the 50s, and George came home and said, "You know what, all of you people can take it straight up the colon, I'm going to bed." And he flipped them all off, and he went upstairs, and...
He did?
The wife, yeah.
What did George do?
George was downstairs playing bongos. What the hell do you think...
All right, hold on for a minute. I don't understand this gender confusion. It's driving me nuts.
Well, then why don't you hang up on him, Phil?
I think I'm going to have to.
He's doing the best he can.
A wild bongo party, sipping Cokes and playing bongos, huh?
Yeah, that sounds pretty wild to me.
That was the era then, Phil, okay?
All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. He went upstairs and she played the bongos and he... And she...
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
What's gotten into her anyway?
I don't know, Frank. He'll be better.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Here's a headline that is pretty good here from the 1969 June 30th edition of the New York Times. 70 paying guests will study Appalachian poverty. Now, that's an interesting thing, isn't it?
Well, what are you making fun of the Great Society? See, I don't want anyone to mock the Great Society of Lyndon Baines Johnson. It was a wonderful, wonderful time in American history.
That may well be, Margaret, but this was also now after President Johnson was gone. This was President Nixon. The war was really out of control. There was a lot of trouble, in paradise, man. So you can talk all you want. What the hell's the name of this town? Cinderella, West Virginia.
Yes, Cinderella, West Virginia was the name of the town. And it was a mythic place. People would go there to study poverty, but it wouldn't... For some reason, I think that the myth, it didn't harm you there. You could starve, but still enjoy yourself.
Excuse me?
Well, that was the thinking. That was...
The thinking? Why? Because they called it Cinderella, West Virginia?
What's that mean? Like, everybody roll around pumpkin.
Yeah, it sounds like that.
Well, don't be ridiculous. You know,
well, who's being ridiculous? You could be in poverty but still be enjoying yourself because you lived in Cinderella, West Virginia. Nonetheless, that's the name of the town. And there were these, and they have a picture of a guy, what's his name? He's the father of 25 children and his wife, and they're living in this ramshackle place. And what the hell? Are there men out there that are the fathers of 25 children still?
Yeah, but they're all black.
Why, you left...
All right, hey, come on. I didn't say anything bad.
I told you, Robert.
Well, you're not allowed to say something like that.
Well, you know, I mean, no, he isn't, but frankly...
You say that's true?
No, it's not true they're all black. But the fact is, I think you got to pick your battles here, man, if you want to kick his ass for some. But just stay away from the race stuff, okay?
Yeah, but I'm allowed to free speech.
No, you're not. No, you're not allowed the free speech on this show. No, you're not. And I'm telling you right now, you do what I tell you to do. That's the free speech you get. You understand?
That's not right.
May not be right, but you can quit anytime you want or I can fire you again.
The mistake you made was bringing him back.
Maybe. All right, so thank you very much, New York Times. I guess we'll dig into that a little bit more. Now, the campaigns took a break for a night of laughs last night. That's right, President, or I should say on Wednesday night, because we are now well into Friday morning here. President Barack Obama and Republican candidate Mitt Romney took a break from their often rancorous campaigns to poke fun at each other and themselves at the annual Alfred E. Smith Memorial Dinner in New York City. Romney told the formal white tie and gown crowd that it's nice to finally relax and wear what Ann and I wear around the house. Very cute.
That's very. They're mocking their image, correct?
That's exactly right. But here is the bigger story, and this is a sick, twisted thing. An avalanche of once-secret Boy Scout documents released yesterday detaining decades of alleged abuse includes at least 170 cases from Massachusetts. I'm reading the Boston Herald here. Spanning the state with the accusations of wretched molestation and a blind eye to protecting victims. Now, that's 170 cases from Massachusetts because I'm reading out of the Boston Herald, but this is a national scandal. The so-called perversion files, a cache of more than 14,500 pages released under an Oregon Supreme Court order, detailed abuse, some substantiated, some simply alleged, that the Boy Scouts of America began documenting shortly after their founding in 1910. Oh, baby. Oh, baby.
This is the end of the Boy Scouts.
Well, I'm sure there are a lot of people that would like it to be.
What, don't you think that would take the Boy Scouts down because of this?
Well, I'll tell you this much. There's a lot of people that want to see the Boy Scouts go away, and those are people that have... Those are people that have claimed... not go away. There's a lot of people that want to see the Boy Scouts better insulated. But most of those people are anti-gay. They think keeping gay men out of there means that there won't be any molestation, you know?
Well, this obviously proves that they're wrong. But what I'm asking you is, the Boy Scouts are in jeopardy, are they not?
The Boy Scouts are in jeopardy, but not for the reasons that a lot of people are thinking. The first thing people are going to say is, see, this is what happens when homosexuals are... Well, the fact is, the Boy Scouts had a long-standing policy against homosexuals being in the Boy Scouts. And look what happened.
Yeah, well, they could still sneak in.
Yeah, man, I didn't sneak in. These are straight guys.
These are heterosexual men, okay? Heterosexual men. They could very well be all heterosexual men. It doesn't have anything to do with gender orientation. This is a illness that goes beyond that. Or if you want to call it an abnormality, a sociopathy, something along those lines. But it transcends whether you are straight or gay. If you say that people want to see the Boy Scouts go away... the people that would like to see the Boy Scouts go away because of this would probably be, in my opinion, gay activists who would say the following thing. Look, you hid instances of child molestation and you wanted to, in a de facto or default manner, blame us because you kept us out of your organization saying we got to keep gays out because we've had a whole bunch of child molestation going on that we haven't told anybody about, but it's been going on since 1916. 1916! And so we decided to take the matter into our own hands. We keep all you gays out, and we don't protect victims. We just hush the whole thing up. And there, we've dealt with it. Well, guess what? No, you didn't. The Oregon Supreme Court ordered that these files be released. In one Massachusetts case, a scoutmaster who also said in records he studied to be a priest admitted to sexually assaulting an 11-year-old scout and masturbating in front of scouts various times at troop meetings. But after undergoing court-ordered counseling, he applied to serve on a scouting committee. While he was initially denied, a handwritten note from a BSA official said, "We would suggest waiting until he has a son old enough for scouting before he again attempts to register." Yeah, you guys are really you're keeping all those gay people out. Another man, an assistant scoutmaster, was accused of molesting and threatening multiple boys. The local scout committee invited him to address the allegations before them, but he instead resigned and skipped town within a month, according to the files. The committee decided to take no legal action, citing the support of the parents of the boys and the pastor of the church. You loving this? Now, what's going to happen is the gay question will come up. And if the Boy Scouts of America attempt to, in any way, shape, or form, make this a problem having to do with gays, and they did the very best they could by keeping gay people out. In other words, if the Boy Scouts of America keep passing the buck, then, yeah, that's the end of the Boy Scouts of America.
Well, if that's the case, then I'm glad to see it go.
Well, I have to be honest with you. I would be, too. I would be, too. All right, we'll be back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
That's baloney.
Shut up, man.
Phil Hendry.
Talk about this binder thing, because Dan and I were talking about, you know, Romney made this comment about binders full of women, meaning that he was looking for qualified women. He was looking for women to fill positions in the government, in the executive end of Massachusetts government. And he asked for and received binders. That is, you know what a binder is. We've all from our school days, with the names of women. Now, a lot of people may misunderstand, well, what does that mean? What's the big deal? I mean, if you think in terms of, if you're looking for a qualified people, if you're looking to find people, and let's say you want to have a specific group represented, be it a gender, women, or a race, you know, black or white or whoever, then the notion of, and the reason you want to bring those people into government is to better represent America and America's strengths and find the best people. And, you know, we're not really looking in the right places to find these best people. The last thing you want to do is boil all of those people down to some group that you shove into a binder or a filing cabinet. Let me go to filing cabinet and look under women. You know, be like kind of saying, you know, I want a job and I feel violent. Well, let me look in my filing cabinet. I'll get a bunch of binders and see what it says under old people, man, and then we'll get back to you, you know, or under Mexicans. So in that, and yes, you may be saying, oh, that's silly. No, it's not silly. That's exactly how it was received, and that's why people, a lot of people were commenting on that. A lot of people who were you know, negatively disposed to that comment. In the story here, there's a lot of jokes that were made, and I saw all the jokes, but, you know, whatever. The Republicans tried to make the best of things. The media fact, by the way, the media fact-checked the comment. Women, the comment, and found Romney's anecdote wanting. Apparently, Romney had said that he had gone to a woman's group asking for resumes, and then they would put these all into a binder, or binders, and he'd say, I had binders full of these resumes. Fact is, according to this fact-check group, unnamed in this news story here under the Reuters banner, the woman's group approached him. Amazon.com's product reviews for two and three-ring binders were flooded with snarky comments and thousands more indications that visitors found the faux reviews, quote, helpful. This binder is 28% cheaper than the male version and works a lot better, etc., etc. Republicans tried to make the best of things. Republican National Committee Chairman Priebus and Senator Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire talked about Obama's empty binder second term agenda on a conference call with reporters the day after the debate, contending that the Democrats' use of the term was demeaning to women. But the Democrats knew a good thing when they saw it and did all they could to run with the metaphor. Obama added Big Bird to his stump speech after Romney mentioned the children's television character. After Romney mentioned the children's television character as he promised to cut funding for public broadcasting during their first debate on October the 3rd, now he talks about binders. We want our sons to thrive in math and science and engineering, but we also want our daughters to thrive too, he said to a rally in Massachusetts. You see, we don't have to order up some binders to find qualified, talented, driven young women who can learn and excel in these fields right now. The bottom line here is, I don't know whether it's a comment that's going to get Romney to... Well, Margaret, you've been very quiet.
I don't have anything to say.
Why?
Well, I think it's self-explanatory. I really do. And Phil, I'll say this. The Republican Party for all of the women that are in that party and for all of the women that speak out as conservatives and for all of the women who claim that the Republican Party better represents them. I've talked to all of them. I know all of their arguments. The Republican Party is controlled by, run by, is philosophically fueled by individuals that know very little, next to nothing, about the issues confronting women, black people, gay people, minorities in general. They are still the white man's party. Thank you very much.
That's not fair to say that.
Oh, Bud, would you stop? I don't even want to waste the breath.
Well, I mean, he has a right to his opinion.
He has a right to his opinion. To quote Harlan Ellison, all right?
Who?
Harlan Ellison.
But you don't have to do that, Margaret. We all know what his name is.
No, you don't. He doesn't.
Harlan Ellison, Bud. You know who he is?
No.
There, I rest my case. To quote Harlan Ellison, you have a right to your informed opinion. You do not have a right to your opinion.
Yes, I do.
Well, that's a little simplistic, isn't it?
What are you saying?
I'm saying that, yes, he has a right to be, if he has a stupid opinion, a smart, he has a right to have an opinion, even if it's dumb. Even if it's dumb. We have a right not to take his advice. We have a right to say, thank you, but, you know, your advice I'm not taking. And if they ask us why, we have a right to say, because you're an idiot. But he does have a right to his opinion.
All right, okay. Well, he has a right to his opinion. I have a right to say it's a stupid opinion.
You may, yeah, okay. I mean, if you want to be rude, you could simply say the following thing, thank you very much, and not take his opinion, not take his advice. And better yet, if you're confronted with a dumb opinion, then argue against it. Show that you have a superior opinion by showing that you can defeat that kind of mentality in a debate. However, I agree with you.
You do agree with me.
I agree with you to this extent. I saw this coming. I saw it in 2008. I saw it in 2004. I could see this coming down the line with the Republicans in 2004 when they were still caught up in, well, the gays. Do we want gays? Do we not want gays? Do we want gays? When they were still fooling around. They don't know which direction this country's going. The Republican Party represents a backward-thinking part of America on certain issues. Not all. On social issues, they're all wrong. They're all wrong. And that's why when you get into the issue of women in the workplace, women as members of a workforce, as members of either the executive or the working class, whatever you want to call it, what is their place? And you say, well, let's go check the binders. They still have women in binders. They have them in their own filing cabinet. They've got them in their own...
What about men? They still have the same thing with men.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't, man. Well, I bet you anything, Romney, I got to say, give me the binders on the men so I can find out who the men are.
Well, I mean, that's a good point, you know, but he's not going to say, let me see the binders on men because there's not a men's issue, per se.
Well, all right. If I was to believe a lot of these clowns that I listen to who say, well, men are being, men are being marginalized and men are now the minority and men are this and men are that, then I would say to them, well, now you show me, okay, the company or the presidential candidate, for that matter, who has binders. Let me go reference my men binder to see how many men are qualified for the job, because I just can't find them, you know. I'm looking for men's resumes, and I just can't find the men that are qualified.
Yeah, that's because every man is qualified.
Every man is qualified, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Then if every man is qualified and we don't need the binders, why do women have to be in binders?
Yeah, he got you, man. No, he didn't. Yeah, he did. No, he didn't.
No, hold on. If the men, I don't have to put the men in the binders, why do I got to put the women in the binders?
Because their women are equal.
Then why are they in binders?
Because men are in binders.
No, they're not, man. You just said no, they're not. If I say I'm looking for some qualified people, I know we need some men. Get me the binder with the men's names. There's no such thing.
That's because there's more,
more what?
There's more men than women. There's not more men than women, but there's more men than women in a work.
Oh, well, that's really good. So there's more men than women in the workforce, but there's not more than men than women in the...
Yeah, you hold on for a minute. I'll say it. There's not more than men in the workplace, but there's not more than women in the workplace.
What?
Hold on for a minute, will you? Bud, if there's more women on this planet and in this country than there are men... There are more men in the workforce. I understand some of that can be attributed to the traditional roles that we have played. However, we still have more women, and we still should be able to refer to women in the workforce or in the workplace or women as a workforce in terms beyond binders. Oh, let me find a women in the binder thing. You get it?
No. And there's nothing you can say and make me see it.
You're an idiot.
Oh, yeah. She's reduced to call me a name.
All right. Well, we're done with this topic, okay?
Why? Because Daddy said so?
Yes, because Daddy said so. I don't want to talk about this crap anymore, but I will tell you this. I agree. I just agreed with you. Why are you making fun of me?
Because she's a backstabber.
I'm not a backstabber. You lousy dwarf.
See? She just used a term.
Margaret, that was really...
He pushed me to it.
And he's not a dwarf. All right.
Midget.
He's not a midget. What the hell's your story?
She's using racially bad terms.
That's not racial.
All right. Hold. Just be quiet. I agree with you. I agree with you. And Romney has, as many people have claimed, Romney has a good mind for the economic terrain. He can discuss, debate, and otherwise mix it up with the best of us when it comes to how he feels the economy should be turned about and things that should be implemented. Okay, that's fine. But like so many people in that party, the minute the discussion comes around to race, gender, these kinds of issues, they suddenly sound like they haven't gotten out of the fifth grade. And I'm telling you, I've heard it a million times. You can talk about some of the best minds on the conservative side of things, and you may not agree, but let's just talk about, or if not even the best minds, the most prominent people. Talk about Rush, talk about Romney, talk about anybody, man. Probably the smartest guy that I've ever heard on the conservative side when it comes to discussing the social stuff, and he still sounds stupid, is Charles, what's the guy's name?
Krautenheimer.
Yeah, Krautenheimer.
Charles Krautenheimer? What are you talking about?
Charles Krauthammer, even I know.
Charles Krauthammer, yeah. Now that guy, when he gets on that show on Fox, he sounds almost literate. I mean, he's a very, very smart man. But again, when you get into these social issues, most of those cats sound really dumb, and Krauthammer, as smart as he is, he sounds smarter than any of these other guys, but he still sounds like he's in terrain that he's not comfortable with. And that's what it sounds like to me, that they just aren't comfortable talking about this stuff. So,
Well, what about Geraldine Ferraro when you said that she was race baiting?
Race baiting?
When she said what?
No, Geraldine Ferraro, that was way back. I don't want to talk about it. When she said that he's black?
Yeah.
She was stupid, too. Okay, let's take a break and come back with our final thoughts, if you want to call them that, here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show for this marvelous Wednesday night. No, Thursday night, Friday morning. Oh, thank God, Friday morning. Friday on my mind, baby. We ought to play that song or something.
It ain't Friday yet.
Yeah, but if we play it at the end of tomorrow night's show, it'll be Saturday morning.
We'll play Saturday on my mind. Do they have a song called that?
No, they do not.
What about come Saturday morning? Oh, I love that.
No, okay, well, we'll see. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Truth
Where
is
has
our
Ben
bitch.
Appleby, my accompanist?
The Phil Hendry
yes.
Show.
I want to sing come Saturday.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, and welcome back. Did this story just break, Dan? Let's see. George McGovern, George McGovern is now in hospice care. That is, he is, as you know, hospice care. He's being taken care of because he's in the last stages of his life. And the senator's family has said that he is, quote, nearing the end. And McGovern is in a lot of ways the end of an era for a lot of people my age, because he is my dad's generation. He's our parents' generation. He is the grandparents of a lot of you guys listening generation. He was moved to a Sioux Falls hospice Monday, no longer responsive, and was nearing the end, said family members. A statement released by the McGovern family said the senator remains at the Doherty Hospice House and is surrounded by family and close friends. The family would like to thank everyone for the care and the compassion shown during this time. Ann McGovern told the Associated Press on Wednesday that her 90-year-old father is nearing the end and appears restful and peaceful. She said the family gathering has allowed for a mysterious, beautiful experience.
What's that mean?
Well, it's, you know, it's something only the family. It's a, I don't know, you know, you're seeing your father, your grandfather, you're seeing somebody go. It's their language. Let's respect it, you know. As people plan remembrances of Senator McGovern, the family encourages donations to Feeding South Dakota, said the statement. Now, George McGovern, when I say he was my father's generation, there's a really, first of all, we all know George McGovern as the guy that ran against Nixon in 72. And we all know George McGovern as an anti-Vietnam War candidate. George McGovern, you might say, was a part of the first generation of Democratic candidates, Democratic Party members, public Democratic Party office holders, who sort of began there seems to this generational tradition in the Democratic Party to be the anti-war party. Well, it started really with Vietnam. And McGovern was part of that prominent generation. There was Eugene McCarthy, Robert Kennedy. A lot of these names you know. Less well-known names were also a part of that. Some of them were Republican, but most are what we call progressive Republican. Most were Democrats. McGovern is interesting for the following reason. He was a World War II veteran, as were a lot of those men. And the World War II vets were not all automatically pro-Vietnam War. Just as, for instance, the Gulf War vets may not, or the Vietnam War vets may not have all been automatically pro-Iraq War. The difference is this. The difference is this. World War II was a just war in the minds of most people. In fact, every generation since looks back on that war as saying, in Studs Terkel's words, the last good war or the good war.
Who?
Stud Terkel. I said Studs.
Well, no, you said Stud Sterkel.
Stud Terkel.
Stud Sterkel.
I'm going to get pissed off here in about 5 seconds.
You said Stud Sterkel. Nobody else done said that.
You did, Phil. You said Stutz. No, you didn't. He said Stu. No, you didn't.
I didn't say Stu. I know that.
You said Stu Sterkel.
I did not say Stu Sterkel. I said...
You're going to cry.
I'm not crying. The last good war. So now you had the last good war. You got all these veterans saying, nah, I don't want my son going to that war. Not at Vietnam War. I know, because my dad was one of them. George McGovern was another one. McGovern flew 35 B-25 missions over Germany. He saved the life of his crew on one of those missions, earning the Distinguished Flying Cross by landing his aircraft safely after it had been damaged by a German anti-aircraft fire. So George McGovern, whether he talked like this or not, he had all kinds of stud credentials, and he was definitely a warrior. But when it came time to that particular point in his life, he said, no, the Vietnam War is a wrong thing. And there were a lot of men like that. Some of them are fathers who said, I don't want my son going off to that. And if you older people, you remember Bruce Springsteen actually did a rap on stage where he remembers what his father said to him when first his dad wanted him to go in the military to straighten his ass out, to cut his long hair, to make him less of a hippie, to make him more of an American, to teach him values, to teach his long hair hippie guitar playing son what it means to be an American, only to say to his son when he finds out that the draft will not take him, he says to him, I'm glad. I'm glad that you're not going. So that's not a negative comment on America. I'm just talking about a particular kind of guy, a particular kind of generational, a man that we all knew. He was our dad, some of us, and he was our grandfather, and he was not necessarily a gung-ho warrior ready to send everybody off to war. McGovern was one of those guys.
Well, you're not putting down the other kind.
No, I'm not saying the Nixon generation, and there are all kinds of guys, and there are all kinds of people that... But McGovern was one of those guys. McGovern was against the war. He ran against Nixon. He got his ass handed to him, just his ass kicked. Because, frankly, the American people don't want to go out of any war a loser. And that was the feeling that if a Democrat got elected, we were going to be walking out of a theater of war as a bunch of losers. As it is, we got out of Vietnam. But, you know, the country was lost. George McGovern tonight is on death's door. He served his state, South Dakota. He went on to be a senator of great achievement. He ran for president and became a spokesman, an international spokesman for so many issues. His former U.S. Senate colleague and 1996 presidential candidate Robert Dole collaborated on hunger relief programs beginning in the 1970s. They were honored in 2008 with the World Food Prize for their efforts to combat hunger. In 2000, they formed the George McGovern Robert Dole International Food for Education and Nutrition Program. And by the time they received the World Food Prize, their worldwide school lunch program was estimated to be feeding 22 million students in 41 countries. How about that? George McGovern and Robert Dole. So, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with the rest of these bastards, you know. But there's a Republican and a Democrat.
Yeah, both those guys are on a World War II.
Yes, they were. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, very patriotic, Phil. Yay.
Well, don't be a smartass.
I'm not being a smartass. This is very good. Robert?
Yay!
All right, the world-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Phil Henry and Dan Northcraft. Don't forget to join us online at philhenryshow.com for a backstage pass. And you can enjoy all of the neat stuff and everything that we have for you at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Until tonight at 10, let that be a lesson to you. 10 o'clock Pacific.
Yeah, you always forget to say that.
All right, so I said it.
Not, you didn't say it soon enough.
Oh, shut up.
No, I'm not going to shut up.
Shut up.
No, I won't shut up.
Phil Henry.